This webinar is being transcribed and summarized.
Okay, good afternoon and welcome to the San Francisco Historic Preservation Commission hearing for Wednesday, November 19th, 2025. When we reach the item you're interested in speaking to, we ask that you line up on the screen side of the room or to your right. Each speaker will be allowed up to 3 minutes, and when you have 30 seconds remaining, you will hear a chime indicating your time is almost up. When your allotted time is reached, I will announce that your time is up and take the next person queued to speak. There is a very convenient timer on the podium where you can see how much time you have left and watch your time tick down. Please speak clearly and slowly, and if you care to, state your name for the record. I ask that we silence any mobile devices that may sound off during these proceedings. And finally, I will remind members of the public that the Commission does not tolerate any disruption or outbursts of any time. I'd like to take roll. Commission President Matsuda?
Here.
Commission Vice President Foley?
Present.
Commissioner Baldoff?
Here.
Commissioner Baroni?
Here.
Commissioner Cox?
Here.
Commissioner Chen Strang?
Here.
And Commissioner Vergara?
Here.
First on your agenda, Commissioners, is general public comment. At this time, members of the public may address the Commission on items of interest to the public that are within the subject matter jurisdiction of the Commission, except agenda items. With respect to agenda items, your opportunity to address the Commission will be afforded when the item is reached in the meeting. Each member of the public may address the Commission for up to 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Richard Brandy, and I wanted to draw your attention to the St. Francis Hotel, a Category 1 building. The main entrance has been closed. The entrance now has been moved to the automobile entrance on Geary Street. The Powell Street entrance, the historic entrance since 1904, used to have three doors. The two on the sides have been turned into fixed windows. They do not open. The center door is only open during 5 to 11 p.m. when the bar is open in what was the historic lobby, which is no longer a lobby but a bar. I believe this violates the Secretary of Interior standards, to wit, alteration of features and spaces that characterize a property shall be avoided. Closing the entrance and converting the historic lobby, which was very publicly accessible, seems to me features that characterize the property. Preservation Brief 11 states, entrances should be placed where they were historically, and it's not recommended to remove or radically change entrances. The time for appeals on this has expired, but I raise this issue to you because I was shocked when I realized what was going on. I couldn't imagine it. I went inside and it felt literally like a dream. And I don't shock easily, but this was just a horrendous thing to do to, and I hate to use the word, iconic hotels on Union Square. I think it's a big mistake. I don't know what can be done at this point, but I wanted it to draw it to your attention. It was approved on a minor permit alteration. So if this is a minor alteration, I don't know what a major one would be. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Susan Mullaney, and I'm asking you to formally review and add to your agenda the
sorry,
recreation.
I'm going to pause your time real quick. SFGov, can we go to the overhead?
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I'm asking you to review and add to your agenda Reckon Park's proposed Crocker Amazon baseball and softball fields renovation. This project will demolish the nearly 100-year-old historic cultural landscape in favor of a synthetic turf sports complex. It should not move forward without your oversight. Crocker Amazon is a uniquely intact New Deal era landscape. The Works Progress Administration built these fields in the 1930s on the former Amazon Reservoir Tract. The defining feature of that work, the continuous tree lines that outline each field, has survived intact for generations. Even during World War II, when the US Navy converted the site into a receiving hospital, the spatial organization in these tree lines were intentionally preserved. This kind of uninterrupted, layered historic landscape is extremely rare in San Francisco. The proposed project would permanently destroy these character-defining features. Reckon Park's proposal will remove 128 of the site's 173 trees, most of them mature, healthy, and directly tied to the original WPA design. These trees are not incidental vegetation. They are the historic structure of the park itself. And once those trees, that layout, and that historic canopy are gone, the park's identity is gone. Given this clear potential for a significant adverse impact on a historic resource, Crocker Amazon requires a full historic resource evaluation by a qualified cultural landscape specialist and a full environmental impact report, not an administrative approval. I am asking you to assert your role and protect this culturally significant landscape. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, commissioners. My name is Bob Hall. I'm with Keep Crocker Real. And I'm speaking today because Crocker Amazon Park merits your immediate attention, especially before any approvals occur at the Rec Park Commission. In addition to its nearly century-old cultural landscape, this site also carries identified archaeological sensitivity. Planning Department records classify the area as having level B potential archaeological significance. Yet no archaeological study has been performed, even though grading, excavation, and artificial turf infrastructure would heavily disturb the subsurface. This alone warrants your intervention. The project would also alter the historically consistent field layout that has existed since the 1950s. Combined with the tree removal, fencing, artificial turf, and the new stadium lighting, the proposal would convert an intact tree-lined neighborhood park into a fenced plastic sports complex. The transformation is inconsistent with the site's historic design, character, and community use. Under CEQA, these changes constitute clear, potentially significant impacts to both historic and archaeological resources. A full environmental impact report is required to examine alternatives, mitigation, and the feasibility of upgrading natural grass fields without damaging the landscape. But no such analysis has been conducted yet. For these reasons, I respectfully request that the Historic Preservation Committee agendize the Crocker Amazon project for formal review, direct staff to complete a historic resource evaluation by a qualified cultural landscape specialist, require appropriate archaeological investigation before any ground disturbance, and recommend preparation of a full environmental impact report. Crocker Amazon is a living piece of the New Deal, wartime, and post-war history. Once altered beyond recognition, it can't be restored. So please help. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Catherine Howard, Friends of the Music Concourse. I'm also going to talk to the Crocker Amazon Project. So I'm a landscape architect. I'm not a historian. But I first became involved with cultural landscapes with the Music Concourse Garage Project. One of the proposals for that project was to cut down the 100-year-old pollarded trees in front of the band shell. Many people were shocked by this proposal by Reckon Park. Friends of the Music Concourse worked with the city to save the trees and build the garage. Historian Bill Costura's report documented the integral value of the trees to the concourse design and resulted in the concourse being landmarked with a special document to preserve the trees. At Crocker Amazon, the trees are also a primary character-defining feature of the site. The tree line pattern that borders the grass fields was established by the original WPA design. When the Navy established its hospital there, they kept the pattern and they maintained the trees. When the site was returned to the city as playing fields, the trees and the tree line pattern were again preserved. It is really extraordinary that this pattern has survived for almost 100 years. Removing the trees would constitute a potentially substantial adverse impact on this historic resource. And what are they being replaced with? Literally, sterile fields and no magnificent tree line to link it to the past. We are asking that a historic resource evaluation be completed by an independent cultural landscape specialist meeting the Secretary of the Interior standards, and that you, commissioners, you have the right and the opportunity to study that report, and we welcome your comments. Also, since there is a potential for items of archaeological significance, an environmental impact report would provide the information needed for this to be a fully informed discussion. We will hope you will agendize this project and make these recommendations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, last call for public comment for items not on today's agenda. Seeing none, general public comment is closed. And we can move on to department matters. Item one, department announcements.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Rich Ducre, department staff. I have a number of items for you today. I wanted to provide an update to you on the family zoning plan and our most recent land use hearing. Right now, the family zoning plan is at the Board of Supervisors in the land use hearing. We recently had a hearing on November 17th, this past Monday. And the final, as I understand, well, final for now, as I understand, meeting for the discussion of the amendments at the land use hearing will be, I think, is scheduled for Monday, December 1st. At this past land use hearing, and I will touch upon the items that are relevant towards landmarks and or items in the commission's jurisdiction, the Supervisor Mandelman introduced new map and text amendments that together would remove properties listed in Article 10, both individually listed and contributors to districts, from the rezoning, thereby removing such properties from eligibility under the local program. Specifically, such properties would be removed from the proposed new R4 height and bulk and the new RTOC underlying zoning designation. The committee moved to incorporate these amendments into the original BOS file, so they basically endorsed them to be part of the plan itself. The committee also obviously examined a lot of other amendments and discussed many of the other amendments, some related to historic, some related to not. And the other ones related to historic were not voted upon at that particular hearing. So we will have another update at your next hearing, which I think is scheduled for December 17th, with regard to where the Board of Supervisors has weighed in on the particular families only plan. Other updates for you, just to address some items with the that you heard during public comment. Our staff did review the proposed alterations and issued a minor permit to alter for the St. Francis Hotel. So keep in mind, operational items such as dictating where and where not an entrance might be are a little beyond our purview. So we can certainly require materials to be kept, entrances to be kept, but we can't dictate the actual operation of the hotel itself. So if you would like more information, I can have our staff member who worked on it, Charles Enchel, forward you information for your consideration. And then finally, just to address the final item from public comment on Crocker Amazon. Right now, the Recreation and Park Department has not submitted any project to planning yet for CEQA review. So we have been in consultation on a cultural landscape report with them in the past. But right now, as I understand, Rec and Park is doing planning for the site. When the project is actually submitted to us, our staff will undertake a review, we'll examine it according to the California Environmental Quality Act, and then render a determination accordingly. So, and that is all I have in terms of updates. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Sucre, did you want to give an update on the task force that they're meeting today?
Yes, apologies. So you might have seen also that the HPC is back at the Commission Streamlining Task Force. today. As I understand, this is a procedural follow-up to the vote that they had previously taken to retain the HPC. And they're doing this on many of the commissions, and it's basically to provide firmer direction in terms of the motion that they made on the commission. So specifically, for example, they will be moving the HPC out of the charter as the recommendation and then moving it towards the administrative code, which is where part of the HPC currently exists in terms of their rules. And so this is follow-up from that hearing that was made. So as I understand, their preliminary recommendation was not changing anything upon what they had previously voted upon.
If I may interject, I don't believe they're considering moving the Historic Preservation Commission out of the charter. Oh. They're taking certain aspects of what is in the charter and moving it more appropriately to the administrative code or the planning code. For example, certificates of appropriateness and Mills Act are specified in the procedures in the charter where it really doesn't belong. It really more appropriately belongs in the planning code. So just a slight clarification. Yeah, you're going to stay as a chartered commission.
And I just wanted to thank the commissioners for their input of that letter, the letter that we did submit to the task force. And just to clarify, Mr. Ioannin and Mr. Sucre, that will not be discussed today, any of the substantive items.
Right. That's not up for discussion. As stated, they're talking about specific portions of the charter that would be moved to the to the code. And if you're interested, they're also talking about the seat qualifications for the commissions and sort of removing them from specific seats and making it a little bit more general, make it easier for the mayor to make his appointments.
Thank you.
Commissioners, I neglected one last update on the family zoning plan. In addition to the amendments that were discussed at the land use hearing, Supervisor Mandelman did introduce an amendment specific to landmarks and lot mergers. And so that has to actually get re-referred back to the Planning Commission. And that hearing is scheduled for tomorrow, November 20th. So the Planning Commission will consider that amendment, and then that will then re-merge back into the file for consideration by the land use hearing of the Board of Supervisors on Monday, December 1st.
Got it. Thank you. Commissioner Vergara?
Thank you. I have a question, Mr. Sucre, on the task force. Will they be recommending that the Historic Preservation Commission continue to play a role in legacy business declarations, or will that just go to strictly the Small Business Commission?
I'm unclear if that was part of the recommendation. Keep in mind, as part of your letter, even though we all enjoy the legacy businesses as a way to kind of move the process faster for the legacy businesses, we were okay with kind of skipping past the HPC and going straight to the small business. That way they can have one hearing rather than having multiple hearings to kind of get to legacy business status. Mm-hmm. And we were going to work with the Office of Small Business to come up with a referral process for us to kind of screen applications or potentially screen them. But I don't know if that recommendation had made it into the task force letter.
Okay. I believe the task force is going to be making that consideration and recommend to eliminate this phase because for precisely what Mr. Sucre referred to as basically expediting the process. There certainly feel good types of items that come before the Historic Preservation Commission, but it's an additional layer and another step that the applicants have to go through and make it a little bit easier.
Thank and you. Do we know when it is effective?
As I understand, and I might defer to the city attorney, just for clarification in case I get this wrong, all of this is dependent on both a charter amendment and then subsequent legislative amendments.
Okay.
So that's at least, I would imagine, a year or two later. But Deputy City Attorney Andrea Ruiz Esquide might understand better.
Yes, great. That's correct. These are just recommendations for the Board of Supervisors to finalize and have a proposed charter amendment for the people to vote on.
Okay, great. Thank you. Commissioner Foley?
Mr. Sucre, after they do land use subcommittee on Monday, when's the full board vote?
As I understand, it's supposed to move to the full board. It's planned, I think, for Tuesday, December 2nd. They are also planning potentially to relook at it again on December 9th. So I think the 2nd and the 9th are the two full board hearings.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments or questions from the commission to staff?
Okay, seeing none, we can move on to commission matters. Item 2, consideration of adoption draft minutes for October 15th, 2025. Members of the public, this is your opportunity to address the commission on their minutes. Again, you need to come forward. Seeing none, public comment is closed, and your minutes are now before you, commissioners.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Thank you, commissioners. On that motion to adopt your minutes, Commissioner Cox?
Aye.
Commissioner Chen Strang?
Aye.
Commissioner Baroni?
Aye.
Commissioner Baldoff? Commissioner Vergara?
Yes.
Commissioner Foley?
Aye.
And Commission President Matsuda?
Yes.
So move, commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 7-0. Item 3, commission comments and questions.
Any commission comments, questions? Commissioner Vergara.
Thank you. I just had some perhaps questions and certainly thoughts regarding the role of the Historic Preservation Commission. That the role that this commission has or perhaps should have with regard to the care of City Hall, which of course is an Article 10 landmark. 2 years ago, we were asked to give our consent to a new wheelchair lift in the lobby at the Carlton B. Goodlett entrance. I understand that right now there are plans to replace the bust of Mayor Phelan in that lobby with a bust of Mayor Lee. And I wonder why the Historic Preservation Commission would be asked for input, on the wheelchair ramp and not on the removal of the Phelan bus, which has been in place since 1937. I know that Mayor Phelan's under a cloud these days, and I can understand that a case can certainly be made to remove the bust. But I think a case can also be made that the Historic Preservation Commission could be helpful in choosing a replacement. One thought comes to mind is that the statuary tribute to Mayor Feinstein might belong in that same lobby in view of all that she did in terms of her length of service as mayor and the care that she showed for the city for the rest of her life. Or maybe somebody else might be more appropriate, but I thought a discussion might be helpful. I understand that our civic art collection is under the care of the Arts Commission, and of course they're qualified to do that. I also believe that the Historic Preservation Commission is qualified to weigh in on matters that affect City Hall. The Arts Commission voted to temporarily remove the Valancourt Fountain at the request of the Recreation and Park Department. As a public structure of over 50 years, maybe the Historic Preservation might have been asked to weigh in on that. But the point is that in determining the fate of the fountain, the Arts Commission and the Recreation and Park Department worked together, and I wonder if the Historic Preservation would be more involved with our arts or whatever other body might be working in terms of what goes on inside City Hall. And one more thing, kind of along those lines, I understand that a committee of friends of Mayor Agnos has raised funds and secured an artist and has a bust of him that is complete, and they'd like to place it in City Hall. From what I understand, it's kind of languishing right now. And so I would just ask my colleagues to consider adding our voice to those that would like to see that bust installed in City Hall, and to do it while Mayor Agnos is with us and able to accept the good wishes of San Franciscans who appreciate his leadership in the aftermath of the Loma Prieta earthquake and his politically damaging decision to remove the Embarcadero Freeway. But I don't know if anybody who wouldn't thank him for doing that right now. Anyway, I'm just wondering if the commission would be interested in doing something to help move that project along. Thank you.
Commissioner Vergara, I can give a little bit of response to some of what your commentary is. In general, keep in mind the HPC's purview is based off of architectural considerations. So like things that would affect the building itself or things that would require a permit then are subject to the certificate of appropriateness process that's outlined in the planning code and then additional review by obviously by this commission. The things like artwork and then the placement of busts and things are not typically in the HPC's purview. So we can certainly chat with the Arts Commission to see if we can work on a referral process or a resolution process, but there's a line between things affecting the building, which is in the HPC's review, versus kind of artwork and other placement of things, which is generally subject to the Arts Commission's review.
I guess I understand, but it just seems that artwork is part of the building. It just seems that if we're talking about a city landmark, that the Historic Preservation Commission should have some say.
Yeah, I think it's the distinction of the permit is the question. Like, do we as the city need to give an authorization for a building permit, in this case for an artwork, and in most cases for things like a sculpture and other things, we do not. So,
can we create some kind of procedural?
I'm happy to follow up with the Arts Commission and then ask for additional advice. I know there is a City Hall advisory committee that provides for input on things that are affecting City Hall specifically, and obviously your code, Article 10 of the Planning Code, has a specific role for the HPC in decisions affecting City Hall in particular. But I can certainly research additional ways that we can get input into work that's happening.
That'd be great, and I'd be happy to sit in on any kind of meeting with that.
And if I can ask, I did hear from the chair of the City Hall Preservation Advisory Commission. I think they've been they've been recommended for elimination by the
task force.
The task force.
Thank you for bringing that up, Commissioner Vergara. Commissioner Baldoff.
Yes, I would ask Mr. Sucre to actually help me understand our role relative to cultural landscapes, because cultural landscapes, and my colleague to my left probably can really weigh in on this better than I can, but are part of the Secretary of Interior's understanding of what constitutes historic resources. And the Crocker Amazon issue that was brought up today is akin to the Valancourt Fountain one in my mind as well, that my fellow Commissioner Vergara has brought up. And I'm not clear why, you know, what our role in that decision to demolish the Valancourt Fountain is or is not, and it seems to have passed by us. And I'd like to understand that, this notion of where our authority on cultural landscapes sits.
Sure, I'm happy to entertain maybe a training or something for the future, so that way the commission gets a firm baseline in like what a cultural landscape is and how or if we regulate it. Keep in mind, the commission's main purview, obviously, is advice on things related to historic resources as a whole. And then you have, obviously, firm purview over things that are in Article 10 and 11 of the Planning Code, so our city landmarks and landmark district program, as well as our downtown conservation districts. So where the realm of cultural landscapes come into play probably in our everyday work is relative towards the CEQA process and in the examination of buildings and sites and resources and areas for what their status as a historic resource or not, as governed by, you know, the state's rules relative towards CEQA. And so the commission's particular purview on CEQA work is fairly limited typically, right? So the staff, planning staff, under advisement of our environmental review officer, work on evaluations of properties relative towards CEQA, and then provide an assessment that's based on there. So for example, on the Valancourt Fountain in particular, for example, Rec and Park has filed a project with us. Our staff did undertake a review of the fountain. We did find the fountain to be a historic resource. However, that is a different path relative towards the project than, as I understand, Rec and Park took for deaccessioning the fountain with the Arts Commission. So that is a different type of exemption and approval than relative towards what we were doing in the regular CEQA process and analysis of the project. But I can certainly schedule a training for future with you. We have a couple of folks on staff, and I'm sure there's lots of friends in our consultant community that would very happily give a nice baseline to the commission on how we look at and assess cultural landscapes, if not maybe even one of our commissioners might be interested in giving a nice training to the rest of their colleagues.
So just so I understand it, the deaccessioning sort of overruled your historic determination?
It's a separate process. It was basically built off of a statutory process that DBI has and others relative towards safety, that it precludes itself from the CEQA process. So,
thank you.
Commissioner Cox?
Thank you. Regarding City Hall, I was just wondering along the kind of gray area that you were describing between impacts to the building versus movable objects, perhaps, or artwork. I would think it would come down to whether or not it's a character-defining feature as outlined in the landmark nomination.
But it's a character-defining feature as required by a permit being required, some kind of authority on our part,
okay.
Typically.
Great. So we could look at the landmark nomination, and if it's listed, then it would likely require a permit?
Potentially.
Okay.
So, yeah.
All right. Thank you for clarifying.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the commission?
Yeah.
Commissioner Vergara.
Yeah. Rich, can you give us an update on the earthquake shacks, 369 Valley?
I actually had a note on that, and meant to give you an update. Apologies. So, commissioners, you might have seen there is a project that has made a lot of headlines regarding 369 Valley and the removal of more material than was permitted. This project is being reviewed by our enforcement team. It is under active enforcement. Just to give context, the two earthquake shocks are not landmarks, but they were identified as historic resources. As part of our review, we worked with the project team to keep parts of the earthquake shacks, move them on the site, and then build, I think, a new house behind it. Correct, Gigi? Is that correct? That's the gist. A neighbor has reported that they did work beyond the scope of what we have approved, and so our enforcement team is now working on it. Our enforcement team has already done a site visit and then is working with the team now and DBI to basically figure out next steps on how we rectify the enforcement complaint. So,
thank you. Commissioner Cox, did you have a follow-up? Commissioner Baldoff?
Yes, just following.
Can you use your microphone?
Sorry, just following up on the Art Deco building that we had approved earlier this year, we had received a letter regarding the design pushing the storage units completely up against the glass of that building, and I was just wondering if there was a follow-up on that.
That's in the same vote. I think you're talking about the project at 1035 Howard
That's
Street.
That's correct.
Yeah. So that has also been forwarded onto us as well for review, basically, particularly since the commission was looking at it as a potential Mills Act property and we are examining to make sure that the project is being adhered to what we approved. And so our team is also looking at that one and working with the sponsor to make sure that that the project is being implemented per what the commissions have approved, both the Planning Commission and Historic Preservation Commission.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Foley.
It's good we have a good code enforcement team. I'm just wondering, it is going to rain tonight. I'm wondering, does the project sponsor, where they tore everything apart, are they trying to cover up the materials they tore out so they don't get more damage?
I'll have one of our enforcement planners, Gigi Gunther, address the current state.
Hi, Gretel Gunther, enforcement staff. We understand that it's going to rain, and it actually has already rained since the siding was illegally removed. But there's been, we've directed the owner and the workers at the site to immediately salvage all siding that's been removed. The siding is still at the site, and so we directed them to salvage it as soon as possible. And we're in the process of giving them a detailed plan to salvage the existing materials and store it so it can be in a dry place.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. Commissioner Vergara?
Is the possibility of a fine in line?
Yeah. So we keep in mind, remember, last year the Board of Supervisors gave us the ability to levy more fines on a particular project or project sponsor relative towards the offense. And so they're currently going through the enforcement process. And so once our zoning administrator has weighed in on that, I'm happy to provide an update. But while we're in the active enforcement process and or rectifying process, which is part of the enforcement process, we don't issue determinations on fines as of yet.
Any other questions or comments from the commission? Great. I think we're ready to move on to the next agenda item.
Very good, commissioners. It's not an action item, so we don't take public comment on comments and questions. On every action item that
right.
The commission are taking action, there is, but not on this.
These were just commission comments and questions and disclosures.
I did through the city attorney's office. We had this conversation several times, and they've confirmed that we're taking public comment on agenda items that are action items.
So if you have a presentation and not an action item,
we do take public comment on informational presentations, yes.
There would be 1 second, 1 minute.
If the chair wants to open public comment.
Regarding our agenda item 3?
Yes.
On commission comments and questions?
Yes.
Sure. 3 minutes.
I'll only take a second. I apologize. That was my impression, and I will check. So in terms of the cultural landscapes, I appreciate very much the offer of the department to hold a program on that. I often hear in my work that, it's a bunch of trees, who cares? And so I hope that you will do that educational session and that you'll do it here so that the public can also hear it and we can learn to appreciate cultural landscapes better. Thank you very much.
Okay, commissioners, with that, we can move on to item 4 for your 2026 hearing schedule. We attached a hearing schedule, and generally speaking, we simply adopt the hearing schedule with the first and third Wednesday of every month being included. I do notice that there was a suggestion to cancel July 1st for the July 4th holiday. I'm not sure that's absolutely necessary. July 1st is sort of several days before the July 4th holiday, so I'm not sure that's necessary. Just as a personal note, your first meeting in 2026 on January 7th actually falls on Russian Orthodox Christmas. I will not be here if you decide to still continue that, but Mr. Sucre has graciously agreed to fill in for me on July 7th if you choose to include that in your 2026 schedule. With that, we should take public comment on your schedule. Members of the public, this is your opportunity to address the commission on their 2026 hearing schedule. Seeing none, public comment is closed, and your hearing schedule is now before you, commissioners.
Commissioners?
Motion to approve.
Seconded.
With the July 1st cancellation?
We typically do take a vacation for, I think, our first week of July. Yeah. Have been.
Okay. You can't July 1, yeah.
That's fine. Very good, then, commissioners. There is a motion that has been seconded to adopt your 2026 hearing schedule as proposed. On that motion, Commissioner Cox?
Aye.
Commissioner Chen Strang?
Yes.
Commissioner Baroni?
Aye.
Commissioner Baldoff?
Aye.
Commissioner Vergara?
Yes.
Commissioner Foley?
Aye.
And Commission President Matsuda?
Yes.
So moved, commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 7-0. Commissioners, I will now place this on consideration of items proposed for continuance. Item 5, case number 2025-000893-COA at 2229 Webster Street. Certificate of appropriateness is proposed for continuance to January 7th, 2026. Members of the public, this is your opportunity to address the commission on their continuance calendar, only on the matter of continuance.
Thank you, President Matsuda and committee members, for letting me speak today. My name is Janine Giswaldo. I'm the owner of 2229 Webster Street. I'm here today to request a continuance. Since our last meeting, I have replaced my team entirely, and we are working towards redrawing the previous architect's plans. I know last time they were not the most straightforward, and having had multiple people take a look at them, everyone agrees they needed to be redrawn. We are doing archival research on the history of the home and the neighborhood, things that were not made aware to me previously. And we're drawing multiple options for the exterior facade that I think not only will meet the requirements, but also add to the historical significance of the neighborhood. I want to assure you that resolving this is of utmost importance to me in my life. Not only is there like a great financial stress of this situation, but also the home has been sitting exposed to the elements, somewhat exposed to the elements, for the last year now. And I think we can all agree that for the sake of the building, this needs to be remedied quickly. I'm happy to answer any questions you might have or get into more specifics. Like, the windows are back in my possession and they are being restored and they will be put back on the building. And there will be a plaque or monument of some kind to honor Ann Bloomfield, which was your idea. I loved that idea. Yeah, if there's any other specifics you want me to get into, it's just we're still working on it. I need more time. And the time is not because we're not taking this seriously. It's, in fact, the opposite. I'd really like to resolve this. So,
thank you.
If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer anything.
Thank you. This is just on the continuance.
Okay, so I don't, okay. But is that okay? Am I allowed a continuance? I know I'm like supposed to ask for it.
We will be voting.
Okay. It's already on the agenda as being proposed for a continuance to January 7th.
Oh, okay,
7th.
This wasn't when I was supposed to talk?
No, you spoke to the continuance, so
okay.
Your
all right.
Support.
Thank you, and we're very happy about your decision.
Great, thank you.
Okay, commissioners, or I should say...
Any other members of the public?
Last call for public comment. Seeing none, public comment is closed.
Move to continue.
Continuance calendar is now before
Commissioner
you.
Foley, did you have a comment?
Yeah, I do have a comment. I think everyone on this commission, people who watch these hearings, understand that this is a pretty frustrating issue for me about the enforcement team having to go work on old buildings time after time. And I actually renovated a very old building once, and I built a very, basically kind of a Class A team. And I think the recommendation that I would make for you is that make sure you get a real qualified team with actually people that are preservation architects, so we don't have to continue to have this conversation. I wish you the best. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I believe there is a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, commissioners. On that motion to continue item 5 to January 7th, Commissioner Cox?
Approved.
Commissioner Chen Strang?
Aye.
Commissioner Baroni?
Aye.
Commissioner Baldoff?
Aye.
Commissioner Vergara?
Yes.
Commissioner Foley?
Aye.
And Commission President Matsuda?
Yes.
So moved, commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 7-0. And we'll place this on your consent calendar. the matter listed hereunder constitutes the consent calendar, is considered to be routine by the Planning Commission. There will be no separate discussion of this item unless a member of the commission, the public, or staff so requests, in which event the matter shall be removed from the consent calendar and considered as a separate item at this or a future hearing. Item 6, case number 2025-007082COA at 500 Washington Street, certificate of appropriateness. Members of the public, this is your opportunity to request that this matter be removed from the consent calendar and considered under the regular calendar. You need to come forward. Seeing none, public comment is closed, and your consent calendar is now before you, commissioners.
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, commissioners. On that motion to approve item 6 on consent, Commissioner Cox?
Aye.
Commissioner Chenstrang?
Aye.
Commissioner Baroni?
Aye.
Commissioner Baldoff?
Aye.
Commissioner Vergara?
Yes.
Commissioner Foley?
Aye.
And Commission President Matsuda?
Yes.
So moved, commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 7-0. And we'll place this under your regular calendar. For items 7A through E, for case numbers 2025-009055LBR, 2025-009973LBR, 2025-009974LBR, 2025-010004LBR, and 2025-010005LBR for the properties at 304 Valencia Street, 248 Utah Street, 3166 22nd Street, 85 Carl Street, and 2607 Clement Street, respectively. These are all legacy business registry applications.
Hello, Commissioners. Heather Samuels, planning staff. Today, we have five businesses before you nominated for the legacy business registry. Staff will present, then after, members of the public and business representatives will have the chance to speak during public comment. I will first hand it off to my colleague, Kalani. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Kalani Alcala, planning staff. Today, I will be presenting on Glamorama Salon, located at 304 Valencia. Glamorama Salon is a gender-inclusive hair salon known for serving people from all walks of life and all over the gender spectrum. The salon is a collective of artists who work together to deliver exceptional service, operating under the belief that hair is the ultimate form of individuality and self-expression. The salon was established by Dina Davenport on April 1st, 1994 at 419 South Van Ness Avenue. The original salon had just five chairs and quickly became a beloved space in the local drag and queer performance scene. In 2007, Glamorama moved to its current location at 304 Valencia. The salon sits in a ground floor commercial space of a three-story Edwardian classical revival building and has an iconic bright pink exterior and interior. In 2017, Dina sold the salon to Scoots McKee. Glamorama was McKee's first and only job in the beauty industry, and in the future, McKee hopes to pass the store to an employee or turn the store into a co-op. Throughout the years, Glamorama has had multiple locations. In 2018, a second Glamorama opened at 1116 Taylor Street in the Tenderloin. This intersection of Turk and Taylor is important to the transgender community, as it's home to Compton's Cafeteria, the site of the Compton's Cafeteria riot in August 1966. The salon was attached to two bars, BIG and Candy Bar, allowing for alcohol to be served at the salon. The Tenderloin Glamorama location closed in 2020 at the beginning of the COVID pandemic. In 2020, another Glamorama opened briefly at 807 22nd Street in the Dog Patch during the COVID pandemic. In 2021, ownership of that location transferred to a stylist who changed the business entity to Dahlia Hair Studio. Overall, Glamorama is committed to the residents of San Francisco and engages with the community through outreach, hair donation, art openings, education, and an active social media presence. The salon also hopes to nurture the next generation of stylists. Over the year, the salon has garnered many awards. The salon received the San Francisco Bay Guardians Best Of Award and was voted the number one salon on Nextdoor. Most recently, the salon was awarded Best Salon in 48 Hills Best of the Bay 2025. Staff supports this application and recommends a resolution to add the Glamorama Salon to the Legacy Business Registry. I will now pass it to Lauren for the next business registry.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Lauren Beal, Planning Staff. Today, I present before you Catherine Clark Gallery, a contemporary art gallery located at 248 Utah Street in the Potrero Hill neighborhood. After several moves, the gallery settled in a building that has been classified as a historic resource within the California Register eligible Showplace Square Heavy Timber and Steel Frame Brick Warehouse and Factory Historic District. Bit of a mouthful. The Catherine Clark Gallery represents 25 living artists, more than half of whom reside or are originally from the San Francisco Bay Area. The gallery also includes work by affiliated and non-represented artists in annual group exhibitions. The gallery serves as a free space in which to see exhibitions, open to the public 5 days a week and several evenings throughout the month for special events and programs. Audiences are encouraged to learn about the art on view by engaging with the gallery's knowledgeable staff and the artists when they are present, and by attending openings and events in which the artists deliver talks. Throughout the year, the gallery programs events to complement the exhibitions, including conversations between artists and authors or curators, performances in response to the ideas in artists' work, and film and video screenings related to themes in the artwork. In this way, the gallery serves as a community hub in which people congregate to learn about contemporary artistic practices and related creative expression. The gallery also remains the only commercial contemporary art space where video work is presented consistently in a dedicated screening room and in conjunction with every visual art exhibition. This has been the case since 2002, when they built their first media room while the gallery was located at 49 Geary Street. Catherine Clark Gallery donates artwork, money, and time to numerous nonprofit organizations and supports virtually every museum in the region through membership and donation. The business has a robust student internship program and works with universities and colleges locally to train students interested in employment in the arts. The gallery is committed to maintaining the physical features and tradition that define the business, including a large interior gathering space to host exhibitions and an industrial storage capacity providing ample space for art and archives storage. Staff supports this application and recommends a resolution to add Catherine Clark Gallery to the Legacy Business Registry. This concludes my presentation. I will now hand it to my colleague Will for the next business.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Will McCallum, Planning Staff. The third Legacy Business application today is for the Hair Place and More Barbershop, the longest-running Native American-owned business in San Francisco, operating in this location for 45 years. Also known as Debbie's Hair Place, the establishment offers a comprehensive range of professional hair services designed to cater to diverse client needs, including expert haircuts, hair coloring, highlights, pedicures, and specialized treatments for all hair types. Debbie has been a community leader and advocate for the local Native American community and helped create the American Indian Cultural District, which encompasses part of the Mission District. Debbie and Debbie's Hair Place have been known to give free haircuts to the Native American community members in need and to hire Native American barbers. The business also serves as a vibrant cultural hub, showcasing handmade American Indian jewelry and indigenous artwork for sale. These unique and locally crafted items celebrate the rich heritage and artistic traditions of American Indian communities, providing customers with an opportunity to purchase one-of-a-kind pieces that carry deep cultural significance. The American Indian Cultural District awarded the business with special recognition for its ongoing efforts to support elders and for its role in food distribution programs. In 2022, former Supervisor Ronan, along with other city officials, presented the business with a plaque in acknowledgement of its significant contributions to the community. The Hair Place is committed to providing exceptional hair care and grooming expertise, supporting the American Indian community, and maintaining the mural located inside the shop, painted by Cy Williams and children from both New Mexico and San Francisco in 2006. The department is very supportive of this application and supports a resolution recommending the Hair Place and More Barbershop to the Legacy Business Registry. My colleague Lauren will now introduce the next Legacy Business. Thank you.
Hello again, Commissioners. Lauren Beal, Planning Staff. The next legacy business I have to present before you is called The Sword and Rose. It's an occult metaphysical shop located at 85 Carl Street in the Coal Valley neighborhood. The shop was established in 1985 by life partners Randy David Jeffers and Patrick Ferry. In its unique location, a single-story storeroom, originally used as a bakery storeroom, tucked into a magical courtyard accessed through a mystical hallway, and you can see photos of that in the application package. It's quite something. The Sword and Rose is the last remaining occult and metaphysical shop of its kind in San Francisco, offering carefully curated collection of books, ritual tools, talismans, and tarot cards, all surrounded by a vibrant array of candles, crystals, stones, jewelry, and more for visitors of every faith. The shop serves the greater metaphysical, spiritual, and occult communities. It offers information and supplies for new seekers and longtime practitioners alike. The Sword and Rose has demonstrated remarkable resilience over the past 40 years, surviving major events, including the Loma Prieta earthquake, multiple tech booms and busts, the Great Recession, and the COVID-19 pandemic. The business faced its most difficult challenge in 2013, when a fire destroyed the owner's home and resulted in Randy's passing. Following a temporary closure, Patrick Ferry reopened the shop and continues to operate it in memory of his late partner and co-founder. The business is committed to maintaining the physical features and traditions that helped define their business, including the courtyard fountain and courtyard garden, which provides plants used to make artisanal incense and oils. The shop is also a family-friendly business. Many families in Coal Valley come to visit to experience magic and wonder, and it is a favorite destination for children who are trick-or-treating on Halloween. The Sword and Rose represents a unique intersection of San Francisco's LGBTQ+ history, spiritual traditions, and creative culture. It remains a cornerstone of Coal Valley's small business community and a living testament to the city's enduring embrace of the mystical and unconventional. Staff supports this application and recommends a resolution to add the Sword and Rose to the Legacy Business Registry. This concludes my presentation, and I will now hand it back to my colleague Will for the next business.
Hello again. The final legacy business application today is for Deitch's Woodwind Workshop in the Richmond neighborhood. For over 30 years, owner Daniel Deitch has specialized in the repair and restoration of woodwind instruments, serving anyone from young students learning with their first instruments to aspiring musicians and professionals performing in orchestras. Musicians of all skill levels, from Presidio Middle School to the San Francisco Symphony and Opera and Ballet Orchestras, have entrusted their instruments to Deitch's Woodwind Workshop, relying on their talented craftsmanship and passion for restoration of woodwind instruments. The small 300-square-foot shop is filled with hundreds of woodwind parts and supplies, and despite the small workshop space, it has an outsized impact on the community and musicians across the city and the Bay Area. The business provides high-quality and meticulous instrument repairs, a service that is very hard to come by in San Francisco today. Deitch's Woodwind Workshop is the first and only woodwind repair shop in the Richmond District and is universally regarded as one of the best in the Bay Area. Numerous top musicians in the Bay Area are clients of Deitch's Woodwind Workshop, and many visiting stars needing service have patronized the shop, including Heinz Hollinger, Richard Stoltzman, Paul McCandles, and Rolf Carney. The shop donates instruments to young musicians, choral orchestra, enriching lives through music, and other community organizations, and has donated services to Washington High School and Presidio Middle School. It has also sponsored local amateur orchestras such as Symphony Parnassus, as well as chamber groups such as the Quinteto Latino and Jeff Stanford's Cartoon Jazz Orchestra. Deitch's Woodwind Workshop is committed to maintaining its instrument repair services, and the department is very supportive of this application and supports a resolution recommending the Deitch's Woodwind Workshop to the Legacy Business Registry. This concludes staff legacy business presentations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, we should open up public comment. Members of the public, this is your opportunity to address the commission on any of these Legacy Business Registry applications.
Good afternoon. My name is Kristen McKee. I'm speaking on behalf of Glamorama Salon. I have been a part of Glamorama for over 20 years, first as a client and more recently as an employee. I've long considered the glam a true San Francisco institution. Hair is deeply personal. It shapes how we see ourselves and how the world sees us. For those of us who fall outside of traditional beauty standards, those of us who are too weird, too fat, too old, too queer, too trans, finding a salon where we feel genuinely welcome can be incredibly hard. Glamorama has always been that rare place where individuality is not only accepted, but celebrated and centered. Founded in 1994 by Dina Davenport, the salon quickly became a cultural home for the drag and queer performance communities. That legacy has continued and expanded under the ownership of Scoots McKee, longtime client, stylist, and creative force, who took the helm in 2017. Under her leadership, the salon became known for gender-affirming hair services, a term she helped coin. Clients travel from across all of California for Glamorama's welcoming, judgment-free approach to hair as identity. Scoots has also built one of the city's most respected assistant training programs and is now developing an apprentice model to create more accessible career pathways in the beauty industry. She has a mentorship approach rooted in creativity, collaboration, and skill building. Her dedication to emerging stylists is well known, from teaching at local beauty schools to guiding new professionals. Glamorama's impact reaches far beyond its chairs. The salon has been intertwined with local artists, activists, and performers, from art shows to free haircut events for LGBTQ and unhoused community members to recent fundraising for the Transgender Law Center. The glam continues to show up for its community. Through every era, Glamorama has remained a sanctuary, a place where self-expression, safety, and creativity come first. After two decades in this community, I can say with certainty that Glamorama is more than a salon. It's a creative home, a community hub, and an essential piece of San Francisco's queer history that continues to shape and uplift everyone who walks in our doors. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, members of the committee. My name is Jaguar Rood. I'm here to speak on behalf of Glamorama as a client and also member of the Glam Fam. Today I want to speak a little bit about, not to the things that you're going to hear, but the things that you're not going to hear. Back in 1994, when Dina Davenport was opening and operating the salon, there was a huge membership of the gay community, and that you're not going to hear from them today. Those individuals are long gone, either from natural causes or suffering from the HIV/AIDS epidemic. And through my own experience, I have had wonderful conversations within outer generational conversations about Glamorama. Men who have survived the HIV/AIDS crisis to talk about how they have lost many friends who had gone to the glam. Speaking about the time that it was located at a different spot and what it meant to be kind of a punk rock indie cultural hub for gay people, trans people, people within our community. So I want to urge you to listen to not only the voices you hear today, of course, but remember that a giant voice is missing in this room. Many voices are missing in this room in regards to what the Glamorama has meant to the queer community, especially within San Francisco. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Chad Behavior, and I'm also speaking on behalf of Glam and their legacy. I couldn't think of a better word for that salon. Most salons, you think it's just about pampering and beauty, getting a last-minute haircut to look good for a family event, or running into a jealous ex. But Glamorama, for hundreds of people in over three decades, has been a destination. A destination for exploration, transformation, and acceptance. Glam and I have discovered each other about 15 years ago, and I've never felt more powerful and myself ever. So much, I started working there. I ended up getting a job at the desk, and while I was working at the desk, I would see some people show up a bit nervous or unsure of themselves, but after they would come up to the counter and the register and pay, I saw fun. I saw sass. I saw them glowing. Lots of confidence. I saw that happen so much and so consistently that I realized that that's something I want to give back to my community. So I did. I got my license and I am now a stylist at the Glam. I made Glamorama part of my legacy, as so many did before me, and I couldn't imagine it not being part of San Francisco's. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi. My name's Chris Darst, and I'm here on behalf of Glamorama. I've been in the city for 43 years, so I had the honor of sitting in Dina Davenport's chair when she started Glamorama during a time where there was a lot going on in the city, and it was great, and it was robust, and you never wanted to be seen on the street without your mohawk up and proud. And a lot has happened, like we all know, in the last four decades in this city, and we've lost a lot. And I kind of faded back into the background because during that time I was Miss San Francisco Leather in 1989. And so I had a lot going on, and I needed that. And when I just faded back into the background. I'm 68 years old, and going out to get a haircut that represents what I feel like inside. Sometimes I would get a spite cut. Sometimes I got a bob. Sometimes I just said, forget it, you know? And when I saw Glamorama on Valencia and I walked through those doors, it was more than a hair salon. I felt safe. Everyone in, I had goosebumps. I was thrilled. I just wanted to sit in one of those chairs, and I got to sit in Scoot's chair. And she's not just a stylist. She has brought me back to who I feel like I am. Even she suggests, she's bringing that back out of me. I'm becoming a part of this community again. She hangs my art in her salon. It's something we need here so desperately, where everybody who walks through that door can be seen for who they are, and they can walk out of that door feeling proud, looking good, and knowing that they are who they are. And they have that confidence. And we need them. We need them desperately in this community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Tina Foltz, talking on The Sword and Rose as the current manager and future hopeful owner. Thank you for your consideration. It is my home. I remember walking in there through the mystical, magical garden the first time and feeling home. And I know so many people who have had that same experience, because for many of us who grew up in very different religions that tried to push us down and change us, it was a place where we could go and find our spirituality in a place that was open and caring. And so, just thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel Deitch, speaking on my own behalf for Deitch's Woodwind Workshop. Fix a lot of people's instruments, and I'm just a little worried about the future. My landlord's getting on in years, and his kids aren't necessarily as amenable to keeping things as they are, which are really very good at the moment for me. But so maybe with a little help from your gracious committee, I can keep on doing what I do for as long as possible. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Catherine Clark. Thank you, commissioners. I'm very nervous, which is why I kept going to the back of the line. I'm also incredibly honored to be among these other illustrious businesses. I talk in public all the time at the gallery. Please see me there, because this context is really a little nerve-wracking. I'm a native San Franciscan. I started my business in 1991 in Hayes Valley. I've done literally hundreds of art exhibitions across the almost 35 years in January that we've been open. Please come on January 10th to our 35th anniversary exhibition. We're also celebrating at that time an artist who I've represented since 1997, Masami Teraoka. His work, a survey exhibition, he's addressed many of the concepts that people have touched on here today, including the HIV/AIDS crisis. He was one of the few artists at that time to make work on that subject. And it is also his 90th birthday. So I just want to say that I'm really honored to be considered, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. You did great.
Last call for public comment. Seeing none, public comment is closed, and these legacy business registry applications are now before you, commissioners.
Commissioner Foley.
So it's going to be sad when you all don't come in front of us and you go to the Small Business Commission, I think. But I really appreciate all of you, and your stories today were awesome. I really appreciate you sharing everything with us, and all of you are incredible, and you actually are what makes San Francisco, San Francisco. So that's thank right. you very much.
Thank you. Commissioner Chen Strang?
I too want to express my appreciation sentiment of being truly inspired by fellow San Franciscans who have, who bring the legacy of San Francisco forward in present day, and you are living the heritage and the culture. You are the present day cultural resource that we are then tasked to recognize and to help preserve. I would be proud to support that, and also appreciate that you have brought voice to the work that you do.
I move to approve all five applications.
Second.
Seeing nothing further, commissioners, there is a motion that has been seconded to adopt recommendations of approval for all these legacy business registry applications. On that motion, Commissioner Cox?
Aye.
Commissioner Chen Strang?
Aye.
Commissioner Baroni?
Aye.
Commissioner Baldoff?
Aye.
Commissioner Vergara?
Yes.
Commissioner Foley?
Yes.
And Commission President Matsuda?
Yes.
So moved, commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 7-0.
Congratulations to all of you, and thank you for your service to San Francisco. We look forward to going to all of your businesses. And please let us know about the January 9th 10th exhibit. I remember him, Mr. Teraoka.
Very good, commissioners. That'll place us on the final item on your agenda today, number 8, for case number 2025-009592, PCA for the Castro LGBTQ Cultural District Ordinance. This is an administrative code amendment.
Good afternoon, President Masuda and Historic Preservation Commission. Alex Westhoff, Planning Department staff. The item before you today is a resolution in support of an ordinance to amend our Administrative Code Chapter 107 to expand the boundaries of the Castro LGBTQ Cultural District and provide additional details regarding the cultural and historical significance of the cultural district. But before I begin my presentation, I'd like to call on Calvin Ho from District 8 Supervisor Mandelman's office.
Thanks, Alex. Hi, everyone. Calvin Ho from President Mandelman's office. I'll keep my remarks very brief, but I just wanted to acknowledge that this request came at the request of the Castro LGBTQ Culture District. There is a rich history of queer and trans civic rights. This movement was born in the Castro, but expanded to the Bose Triangle after the 1969 Summer of Love, and we would just love to have this district include the Bose Triangle. I want to thank Tina from the Castro Culture District, who is not here today. She's out sick, but want to thank them for their work on this legislation. And I'll turn it back to Alex.
Thank you.
Thank you, Calvin. And if I could have the slides, please. So just a brief background, the Castro LGBTQ Cultural District is one of 10 cultural districts defined by Section 107 of the Administrative Code. Just last year, they completed their Cultural History, Housing, and Economic Sustainability Strategies, or CHESS report. The current cultural district boundaries are shown on this slide and generally encompass Market Street to the north and west, 22nd Street to the south, and Noe Street to the east. Specific areas along the north and south side of Market Street between Minoe Street and Octavia Boulevard are also included. Administrative Code Section 107B.1 includes a long list of findings regarding the historical and cultural significance of the area. These findings include events, people, businesses, institutions, and more of historical and cultural importance to the LGBTQ community. The administrative code amendment before you would expand the boundaries and also include DuBose Triangle, as shown on this slide. The amended ordinance would also include new findings to support the boundary expansion, including in the 2020 census, DuBose Triangle had the largest concentration of LGBTQ residents in the Greater Bay Area. In the 1970s, when LGBTQ people were beginning to move to the Castro, DuBose Triangle became a landing place for many members of the community. After the Summer of Love in 1967, gays and lesbians from the Haight moved to Eureka Valley, which included DuBose Triangle at the time. Harvey Milk resided there before he set up his camera store in 1972. The neighborhood also had its fair share of LGBTQ businesses, including the first lesbian biker bar, Scott's Pit. And currently, there's a number of LGBTQ businesses, including the Harvey Milk Community Center, Bow, the Lookout, the Academy, the Detour, Blackbird, and the Wooden Spoon. The planned site of the GLBT History Museum will also be in DuBose Triangle at the intersection of 16th Market Street and Noe Street, often referred to as the heart of the Castro. Approximately 50% of the businesses in the Castro Merchants Association are within DuBose Triangle and the footprint of events like the Castro Art Walk. And for these reasons, the department recommends approval of the resolution in support of the proposed ordinance amendment. Unfortunately, Tina Aguirre, executive director of the Castro LGBTQ Cultural District, was unable to attend today, but provided a letter of support, which I just handed out. In summary, the staff and advisory board of the Cultural District support this expansion, as DuBose Triangle is home to many LGBTQ residents and places, as well as cultural events. They maintain an ongoing relationship with DuBose Triangle Neighborhood Association and would like to continue advancing their mission of preserving, sustaining, and promoting the rich cultural legacy of the Castro and its significance to San Francisco's LGBTQ plus community and beyond, with associated goals. So that's all I have, but I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. With that, we should open up public comment. Members of the public, this is your opportunity to address the commission on this item. You need to come forward. Last call. Seeing none, public comment is closed, and this matter is now before you, commissioners.
Thank you, commissioners. Commissioner Barone.
This is from Mr. Westhoff. I think this is wonderful, just an observation, and the mapping, and it's normally I wouldn't notice this, but given that it's not a standard grid, it's very difficult to see all the boundaries in the upper part. It would be great to have a transparent film fill over the streetscape so we could see a little more detail. Just for your records, that would be great.
Thank you for the suggestion. Yes.
Thank you. Commissioner Chen Strang?
Thank you very much for this report. I want to... There's just a couple of questions. One is, what is the general precedence for prior historic districts having expanded? And this is not a question that is critical of this particular measure, but I just wanted to kind of understand how this sits as a precedent. Mm-hmm. And then the second question I have is, does this, was there any evaluation of Category A, like the inventory of Category A properties that are now, now included in this expanded area? I don't know if that's something that was studied or
sure. Commissioners, let me just frame out a little bit of what this program is, because it intersects with our kind of historic district work, but is separate then. So the cultural district program as a whole is something that's unique to the city and county of San Francisco. It's our way of recognizing communities and then kind of pulling them together.
Sorry, did I misspeak? Did I say historic district?
Yep.
Okay. I apologize. Okay. I was thinking cultural district.
Sure. So, but it's helpful for the record as well, just because yes. I think there is a lot of overlap between what we do in terms of historic districts and recognizing historic resources versus the cultural districts, which is really about the people and communities that are within them.
Thank you. I meant cultural districts, but sure. Nevertheless, I believe that if nothing else, the prior agenda item in reviewing legacy businesses, identifying cultural resources, cultural mm-hmm. sort of districts and cultural entities in our city, in our good city, is relevant to the work of identifying historic resources in terms of actual built form and open space, and I think is relevant to the purview of the Historic Preservation Commission. So, hence, that's the reason why I do. It's an intentional question about what are our Category A physical cultural resources within this expanded cultural, proposed expansion of the cultural district.
So I don't know if we can certainly get that information for you, but the cultural district program is really about kind of focusing the community to then let them decide where they kind of want to go. So right now I think we have 11 cultural, is it 11?
10.
Cultural, 10, yes. Thank you. Cultural districts throughout the city. They each focus and have a different focus based on what their particular needs are. So like the Japantown one is different than the Castro LGBTQ sure. one. One might have a land use focus. One might have a historic preservation focus. It kind of is dependent on what they construct as their particular focus as kind of baked into the
their CHESS report.
Thank you, yep. The CHESS mm-hmm. report that they produce, which is part of the mission. So they're funded by the city, right? It's about kind of consolidating our communities together. I'll say within our work on the historic preservation team, they've been invaluable in terms of getting and collecting both the stories and the people and the honestly, like who we need to talk to to basically talk to both this culture and people. So it just happens that we also ascribe this into a particular place. It's the first time that we have the city, as I understand, has expanded one of the cultural districts. And so I'll say it just is kind of based on our analysis, more emblematic of like who mm-hmm. the Castro LGBTQ community is.
Right.
So obviously it's something that we are supporting at the department level with Supervisor Edelman's office in particular. But it's definitely something that is hard to understand because we have like the historic district program, which has regulatory frameworks and based on state and federal guidance versus our kind of local creation of this program.
Understood.
That's unique in the city and
quite
frankly the nation.
Part of the reason why I asked that, this is discussion, not a specific question, but part of the reason why I ask that is because culture sometimes does not, follow street delineations. I find this to be particularly interesting and relevant, right? Because there is actual hard locations, actual places that signify, cultural significance. The community center being an easy example that is now within this new proposed expanded area. So thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner Baldoff?
Just to sort of go on from that line of questions and thoughts, I believe DeBose Triangle has a historic district that it is a part of. So in a sense, there is an overlay of Category A's inherently in this. I think the thing that concerns me, in all of the upzoning conversation, is that while the DeBose Triangle Historic District becomes protected, I don't think that the additional areas that are is part of this proposal are protected between Market and the DeBose Triangle Historic District. Because this does not provide any
correct
protection.
So just to be clear again, the Cultural District Program and the boundaries of the Cultural District Program may have underlying historic resources or historic districts within them, but they're not coterminous. So like the boundaries of the Cultural District are not the boundaries of a historic district that we have. So for example, in the Pacific Islander Cultural District out in the Bayview, there is not, for example, any historic resources that are within the area that's ascribed to for that particular cultural district.
Well, I think
this one happens to have overlays.
Well, and what I think that I'm interested in terms of sort of San Francisco in the future is that if we believe that buildings can be landmarks because of the people who lived in them, not because of necessarily just their physical characteristics, that and this is sort of why I'm so interested in this issue of cultural landscapes, is that I think we need to ask ourselves, do we need a more nuanced view of what it is that we protect or at least have a conversation about before we demolish it? I think that we're in a very interesting moment where there's needs to be a lot of conversation about what it is that we want to preserve, and recognizing that we need to move forward as well and build more and do things. But I'm all in favor of this cultural district, but I think it brings up the question of, so we designate this, what does it mean? What are we really saying with this designation?
Are there any more questions or comments from the commission? Do we hear a motion?
Motion to approve. Second that.
Okay, commissioners, if there's no further deliberation, there is a motion that has been seconded to adopt a recommendation for approval. On that motion, Commissioner Cox?
Aye.
Commissioner Chenstrang?
Aye.
Commissioner Baroni?
Aye.
Commissioner Baldoff?
Aye.
Commissioner Vergara?
Yes.
Commissioner Foley?
Aye.
And Commission President Matsuda?
Yes.
So move, commissioners. That motion passes unanimously 7-0 and concludes your hearing today.
Thank you very much.